This week in Joshua chapter 10, the conquest of Canaan continues. Last week we discussed how the Gibeonites joined forces with Israel, as the other peoples of Canaan allied themselves against Israel. This week Israel's armies will be forced to defend the Gibeonites against a united opponent, leading to a swift campaign sweeping Israel to victory across almost the entire southern half of the Promised Land. And in the midst of this, God will deliver the victory through what must have been the most stunning miraculous intervention yet, that the sun stood still. We'll consider the military victory today, but we'll save the miracle for another week. So then, if you haven't yet read Joshua chapter 10, I recommend that you pause and read it now. Last week's passage mentioned in passing that the kings of Canaan were mustering their forces to work cooperatively against Joshua and the army of Israel. The lone exception was the Gibeonites, who had made a treaty with Israel. Now, we read that the kings of Canaan were none too happy about this, and so they attacked Gibeon in response. The coalition against Gibeon was organized by the king of Jerusalem, one Adonai Zedek. Adonai means Lord, and Zedek means justice or righteousness. King of Jerusalem, though he may have been, I can only suppose that this was a misnomer. The kings of Canaan were hardly lords of justice. Adonai Zedek was deeply disturbed when he heard that Gibeon had made peace with Joshua. Neighboring Ai had been destroyed, and Gibeon was a city even greater than Ai was. So Adonai Zedek must have reasoned that if these great cities could fall to Joshua, then his own city of Jerusalem would be next. And of course, if Gibeon could make peace with Israel, then he must have feared that some others in the region might as well, and then he would have become one of the lone holdouts against the invaders. If everyone in Canaan was to continue presenting a united front against Israel, Gibeon would need to be made an example. And so we read in verses 3 through 5 that Adonai Zedek called together a coalition of 5 southern Canaanite kings, himself included, to teach Gibeon a lesson. That coalition included King Hoham of Hebron, King Piram of Jarmuth, King Japhiah of Lachish, and King Debir of Eglon. Of note, King Debir should not be confused with the biblical city of Debir, which shares the same name and will be in this passage. And his city, Eglon, should not be confused with another king named Eglon, who will appear in a different book. Now, the passage doesn't explicitly say as much, but my supposition is that these 5 kings of Canaan brought along soldiers from other surrounding smaller villages. We read before how Gibeon had a number of smaller towns in its sphere of influence, and my guess is that all of these cities of Canaan were in similar arrangements. So anytime we read about a battle with a major city, I guess that the other minor surrounding settlements were involved. And so these 5 kings laid siege to Gibeon. The Gibeonites, in response, sent a message to Joshua asking that he rescue their city. And again, I must say, Joshua displayed a much stronger support for Gibeon than I might have. If it had been me, I might have guessed that this was Gibeon's chickens coming home to roost. Israel had been tricked into making peace with Gibeon, and the people of Israel wanted Gibeon dead. So here was an opportunity for Joshua that he could just passive-aggressively let the Canaanites put an end to the Gibeonite problem, and let the Gibeonites deplete the armies of Canaan in the process. This seems especially pertinent because one would hope that Gibeon, having just become an ally, would be an asset in the war. But just as soon as they've come on board, they've become a liability. But Joshua, faithful to his treaty, doesn't see things that way. So he responds, bringing all of Israel's soldiers with him. Joshua had been at Gilgal, near to Jericho, where Israel's base of operations was established. And on receiving Gibeon's call for aid, his army set out, marching some 15 to 20 miles west to Gibeon. And Israel did not waste any time about it. When they received the message, they marched. And they marched through the night, such that when they arrived unexpectedly at morning, their opponents were surprised. Jehovah had encouraged Joshua, evidently on the way, telling him that none of these men would stand before him, and it showed in the response of the Canaanites when Joshua arrived. The armies of Canaan were thrown into a panic as Joshua's army suddenly appeared to strike them down while Canaan was unprepared. The Canaanites who survived took flight, running southwest down the mountain slopes. Evidently, some more went to the west, ending up about 15 miles away in Azekah, while the others went farther south, running to Makeda, some 20 miles away. So Israel really put them to running. If you look at a map, you can see that Israel chased them clean out of the mountainous region into the edge of the plains. During the retreat, God provided very visible help to Israel by bringing on a hailstorm, evidently one with some pretty impressive hailstones, onto the fleeing Canaanites. The passage informs us that the hailstones were so effective that they killed more Canaanites than Israel had killed with their swords. And of course, God also made the sun stand still at Joshua's request, and there was good reason for that. Joshua and his men were in a chase that could see Canaan really beaten badly so long as they did not have a night to regroup and send out a call for reinforcements. This long day would give Joshua and his men time to finish the chase, seek out, capture, and kill the five kings, and lay siege to Makeda, where the fleeing Canaanites had sought refuge. Well, God was on Joshua's side, and so he helped him by stopping the sun. And there is much to say about the sun standing still. We have to consider the language of a heliocentric worldview, the physical implications of the sun stopping in the sky, God as master of the universe, the book of Jashar, and so forth. We don't have time for all that today. Next week, I'll plan to have a message about the sun standing still. But for now, just accept that it happened for the sake of continuing the story, and accept that this is a miracle which is not at all outside the power of an omnipotent God. Note also verse 15 before we move on. It agrees with the end of the chapter that Joshua and his soldiers went back to Gilgal, but it is not chronological. Joshua and his men would go back to Gilgal after the end of the campaign, but not before the events recorded in the rest of the chapter. Specifically, verse 19 makes it clear that Israel was still chasing the Canaanites when the rest of these events happened. So we have one continuous narrative here, and then this one verse which seems out of place. As for why that is, I have no clear explanation. Perhaps Joshua intended to end the narrative there, but later decided to go on and give us more detail. Or maybe it serves some purpose that I don't understand. Who knows? Just don't let it confuse you. Joshua and his men did return to Gilgal, but not until after the chase was over. In verses 16 through 27, we have a record of what happened to the five Canaanite kings who started this whole mess. When the Canaanites retreated, the five kings made it all the way to Makeda, and while everyone else evidently went toward the city itself, the kings went to hide in a cave. It did them little good. This was a particularly long day, which gave Israel plenty of time to search and plenty of daylight to see the kings running, so the kings were quickly found. But since the chase was still hot, the kings would have to wait. A stone was rolled over the mouth of the cave, and a few soldiers were left to guard it. After the chase was over, Israel regrouped at Joshua's camp near Makeda, and then the kings were brought out so that Joshua himself could kill them. He had his top men hold the kings down to stand on their necks, and then he himself killed them, encouraging his men to be strong and courageous all the while. Joshua, I think it is safe to say, was not a man who was uncomfortable with killing. And then, as had been done with the king of Ai, those kings were hanged up on five trees, and as always, because the law of Moses said so, they were left on the trees until evening and then taken down. The kings were then thrown into their hiding cave and covered with rocks, which, you guessed it, can still be seen to this day. That is, when the book was written. Meanwhile, Joshua's men had chased their enemies as far as Makeda, where I suppose they must have taken refuge, but Makeda could not protect them. That same long day, Joshua captured Makeda and gave it the Jericho treatment. Everyone in the city was killed, and the king of Makeda, we are told, was given the same treatment as the king of Jericho. And that's kind of funny, because Joshua chapter 6, which records the destruction of Jericho, made no special mention of its king. My guess is that he was hanged up just like all the other kings had been. And so that was the end of the longest day ever. Joshua and his men had started the day with a battle, and spent what would normally be the afternoon chasing soldiers to Makeda. In what would have been the evening or night, they brought out the kings and killed them, and about that same time, in the morning or the rest of the next day, they besieged and conquered Makeda, and then the sun finally set, and they took down the kings. So this battle, starting at Gibeon, was a turning point in the war, and we should not understate its influence. Canaan had been terrified of Israel from the beginning, but as Ai showed, short of God's intervention, the Israelites were not an unstoppable fighting force. But after this battle, the scales had tipped considerably in Israel's favor. They held a major foothold in Canaan's mountainous region. They had conquered large swaths of land and many cities which could give provisions to their armies. With this victory, they surely seized a large cache of weapons and armor, in addition to horses, chariots, and the like. They had considerably strengthened themselves by solidifying a strong alliance with Gibeon, whose service would relieve Israel of the most miserable logistical duties. And perhaps most importantly, the largest army which the South could muster was decimated, such that there was no real force remaining to stop Israel from sweeping through Israel's southland. And as if all that weren't enough, the seemingly most powerful kings of Canaan had been executed, effectively decapitating the political leadership for the entire region. The Canaanites had thought that by banding together and whipping Gibeon back into line, that they would have the best chance of pushing Israel back. But instead, they only succeeded in delivering all of their eggs to Joshua in one basket. A better strategy might have been to hunker down and hope that a long, slow war with months or years of siege and the slow attrition of soldiers might tire Joshua and his men out. But then I suppose hindsight is 20/20. Then again, no strategy could possibly have worked, because Israel's God could not have been beaten, no matter how the war had progressed. And thus Israel's position was stronger than ever before, not even to be questioned, really. And thereafter, in very short order, they commenced a campaign to sweep quickly over the entire area. With Makeda fallen, Israel started taking everything nearby. They went northwest about 10 miles to Libna, which we note was not one of the cities in the coalition. They gave Libna the Jericho treatment, and its king also was treated as Jericho's king was, however that is. This, I'm guessing, happened on the day after Makeda. On the second day, evidently the second day after Makeda, they went to Lachish, 5 miles west of Makeda. Lachish was one of the cities in the coalition, so their king was already dead. They fell quickly and were all put to the sword. Too little too late, Horam, king of Gezer, arrived to help Lachish. Gezer is a city that we haven't mentioned yet, but it was some 30 miles north of Makeda. Horam met Joshua in battle, and everyone in his army was killed in the field. Having cleared out the more northward cities, which might have cut off his supplies or his retreat, Joshua next turned his attention, evidently the next day, to Eglon, about 5 miles south of Makeda. That city's king, Debir, had already been killed, and the city fell in a day. Everyone in the city was killed. Joshua then moved on to another coalition city, Hebron, which was about 15 miles east and south of Makeda, back in the mountainous region. Hebron's king had already been killed. After the attack, everyone in the city was killed with him, and in the surrounding towns as well. And finally, for this part of the campaign, Joshua attacked Debir, the city, not to be confused with the dead king of Eglon. In verses 38 through 39, we read that this city, which was about 15 miles southwest of Makeda, making it the southernmost point yet in this campaign, fell just as the others had, and its kings got the same treatment. And so in only about a week's time, Israel went from having a foothold in the mountains to having conquered the entire southern region. Verses 40 through 43 give us the summary. From Kadesh Barnea, in the southeastern edge, all the way to Gaza, in the southwestern edge, and from the hill country to the lowland, Joshua had conquered it all and had taken all of their kings. We have only two notable exceptions: Jarmuth, one of the coalition cities which was not mentioned in the conquest, and Jerusalem were not conquered. Evidently, Jarmuth was spared for a time because it was farther north than any of the other cities conquered in this drive. However, the scriptures never explicitly record the capture of Jarmuth, so when it finally fell is not certain. Perhaps it happened in or around the same time period, but maybe the city was just not large enough to warrant a mention. Jerusalem, also known by the name Jebus after the Canaanite people who lived there, would remain under Jebusite control. Joshua 15:63 tells us that Jerusalem remained under Jebusite control, quote, to this day, near to the end of Joshua's life. Israel took the city not long after Joshua's death, only to lose it again. Judges chapter 1, verse 7 and 8 tells us that the men of Judah took the city, and that they brought captured king Adoni-Bezek there. But later in that same chapter, Judges 1:21 tells us that the Jebusites regained control of the city and the Benjaminites were not able to drive them out. We also have it toward the end of the book of Judges in chapter 19 that Jebusites remained in the city. So except for the brief period when Judah took Jerusalem, it apparently remained under Jebusite control until David finally conquered it hundreds of years later. Of note, gaining and then losing territory, as happened at Jerusalem, was not uncommon in the Israelite conquest. Today we read that Hebron was captured by Joshua, but Judges 1 tells us that it had to be conquered again after his death. When Israel lost control of the city is uncertain. So while Israel did sweep to some quick and decisive victories in this campaign, maintaining all of that territory for the long haul was a different matter. It seems that Israel was quick to go in and kill everyone, but then they returned to their own camp and did not occupy the cities, leaving a vacuum into which more Canaanites would come. But for at least the time period covered in today's story, the Southland was conquered, and Joshua returned to his camp at Gilgal. In conclusion, then, Joshua 10 records the story of Israel's conquest of southern Canaan. It was a quick campaign that began when five of southern Canaan's strongest kings joined together in hopes of bringing Gibeon to submission. They did not expect that Joshua would be so quick to defend his new allies, but Joshua was. He marched overnight and caught his opponents by surprise in a morning attack. After the battle, the Canaanites fled and were chased all across the southland, with many of them being killed by hailstones along the way. Joshua needed more time to chase the Canaanites, and so he asked God to stop the sun from setting, a request which God heeded. The Canaanites were chased as far as Makeda, with the five kings hiding in a cave near there. On the long day, both Makeda and the kings were captured, and with them out of the way, Joshua led Israel on a sweep of the entire surrounding area, killing all of the Canaanites in every city he visited over the course of about a week. When reinforcements arrived to defend the Canaanites, he defeated them as well. And thus most of the southland was conquered, and Israel's army returned to their camp. Next week, deeper contemplations on the miracle when the sun stood still. For those of you who are listening to this message away from your computer and are looking for more like it, you can find us at eastjordan.church.